anatomy. Shock my big chest, where the best is a philosophy. Drinking at lunch brings verbal skills like a sucker punch. Woke up to CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB.
It's been a while since we did a CMIB. And basically, I think the problem is I had writer's block, and I started leaning towards content on the internet that I could comment on. That's not really what I wanted that show to be, because I have Ninja News Japan, which is commenting on the news in Japan, and I didn't want just like a non-version of Ninja News Japan to be CMIB. CMIB was experimental. It's supposed to be different, supposed to be fun, supposed to be other stuff. So here we are. I'm back. Why? Because someone asked me a question, and I realized that is where I flourish. Someone asked me, could a zombie have a baby? And that question settled in my brain, and I've been ruminating on it for months. And so in those months, I came up with a multitude of answers, and I've decided to work them all out here with you today. Now, the first thing is we need to define a zombie, which seems like a really simple thing to do until you go back through the history of zombies in general. Because what is a zombie? A zombie is the living dead, the walking dead. We have a lot of sort of amorphous terms for what a zombie is, but nothing that's truly definitive, and it's because people have zombie as a concept. It's the undead. So I decided to go back sort of through the history, and so let's really clarify what zombies are. So the very first zombie type was a hypnotized villager. Now, this is because the very first version of zombies were actually village people who had been hypnotized by Dracula. So this is where the term undead comes from. These people were not dead, but at the same time they were living, but at the same time they had no sort of self-will or self-control or anima or whatever you want to call it, because that had been taken away by the magical power of Dracula. So these people actually had very little to do with dead bodies, which when you think of zombies, you tend to think of dead bodies rising up from the earth. This is not the case in the very original way back when zombie. They were called undead because they weren't dead, but they weren't alive. And they weren't alive because they had lost sort of their own free will. Then we get into sort of the 80s, I would say. And the 80s became sort of the mystical. This is when you had the Dungeons and Dragons crisis. It had a sort of hysteria name to it. It was like people were afraid of...
It was referred to as the Satanic Panic.
Satanistic hysteria kind of took over the country. Dungeons and Dragons became a point of attack. I actually remember that really well because this is when I was a kid. If you watched a zombie movie from the sort of 70s to 80s, you got a sort of mystical version. So they would say, hell is full, or some kind of magic had been done. So the magic had been done to raise the dead. So these were corpses that were somehow reanimated and then came up out of the ground, and usually brains, that's kind of where we got that sort of stereotype from. Then we get the third type. The third type is when we get into the 90s, I would say into the late 90s more than anything else, and these are chemicals. And this is, you can see the sort of awareness or cultural commentary that comes along with zombie movies or horror movies actually shows, because you have the original was just, I want villagers to do what Dracula says. And then it's like going to apply more to our concerns. It's going to apply to, you know, the hysteria that's going around Satanism at this time. And then now we get into the 90s. What are the biggest, scariest things? It's chemical warfare. It's chemical in the air. It's chemicals in our food. So these chemicals, usually the opening of this movie was the military is transporting a truck. And that truck has a crash, and then a barrel falls down, rolls into the water or rolls into the ground, and then breaks. And then the liquid, usually glowing green, seeps into the ground. And then the next scene, you have zombies coming out of the ground. That was a very normal start to a zombie movie at this time. Then you get the fourth one, which is sort of the more modern zombie. So this is going to be the aughts plus. This is usually a disease. And you can actually see, in a way, we've come full circle. Because while number two and number three are sort of corpses that have been reanimated, number one is just a villager that's lost their will. The more modern films, it's usually some kind of flu. It's a disease that goes around. It's incredibly virulent. It took place before COVID. I mean, this is actually sort of almost prescient in how deadly diseases are going to be. But it became to the forefront because we had the SARS issue. We had a bunch of diseases go around. The people were freaking out. Ebola. I remember Ebola. There was even an Ebola movie. It was really cheap, really bad. Do not watch it. But this means you don't have corpses being reanimated. You have regular people who get infected with the disease and they lose their self-control. They lose themselves. They become the living dead. Very much like number one. So in my view, these have actually all become sort of full circle. We went from people to corpses in magic, to chemicals reanimating corpses, to people who are now being impacted by a disease, which is very different from the hypnotized, but it is a healthy human body that is then attacking people because they've lost, because their brain has been infected by this disease. So the question then, once we've defined which zombie we're talking about, has to be, can they produce offspring? So I'm going to make a matrix of a healthy male, a healthy female. There is a zombie male and a zombie female. And so we can create kind of a matrix of how the different things get together. Because we also, can a zombie have a baby, needs to be defined by the people involved in trying to create the baby. We would have healthy male to healthy female. That can produce a baby. Perfect. No problem. We have a healthy male to a zombie male. You're missing some of the requisite parts to produce a baby. I'm just going to go ahead and say no. You have a healthy female and a zombie female, also missing some of the requisite parts to produce a baby. So that's why there's no lines going down. A zombie male and a zombie female is a possibility. A zombie male and a healthy female is a possibility. A healthy male and a zombie female, also a possibility. But it depends on which kind of zombie we're going to use. Now, number one, we can immediately take that off the list and say absolutely they can produce a child, because them being a zombie in this case is more metaphysical than actually physical. Because I've lost my mind is now being controlled by Dracula in this case, it means my bodily functions are all exactly the same. So since my bodily functions are exactly the same, there's absolutely no problem with me having a baby, be it male or female, on either part of the matrix, because everything's in working order. We have to assume. We're going to go ahead and just assume everything's in working order for this point. Only problem then becomes a complete lack of consent, but I think that is something we can say for all four types of zombies, is that consent kind of goes out the window. If we jump straight to number four, where a disease is turning people into zombies, I think if you catch it early enough in the disease, everyone is okay here, because a healthy male and a zombie, or a healthy male and a zombie female, because she has a very virulent flu, doesn't mean that her body is broken down, doesn't mean those things don't work anymore. So they could produce a child. Same with a zombie male, human female, if it was early enough in the flu aspect. Now, the question is, the disease, how much does it ravage the body? What does it impact? That would need to be defined to actually go any further than that, because pretty quickly, diseases shut down reproductive functions. So there's a whole secondary question was, can a zombie male get an erection? Because that is, let's say, technically required for the functioning of producing a child. I have actually done a whole episode, I think it was in the old Veloci podcast, where I talked about whether or not vampires could get boners. And I came up with two solutions. One, they could, because they could just use magic and make a magical boner because there's some kind of magic keeping them alive. Or two, since they don't have a heart that beats because they're essentially undead as well, there is no blood pumping through their body and therefore they cannot produce an erection. To really answer the question, can a vampire get a boner, you need some more definitive aspects about the vampire's physiology. The same applies to these 2,000 plus zombies where it's a disease that's keeping them alive, making them hyper-aggressive, that kind of stuff. The Walking Dead falls into either number two or number three. Now, I remember at the end of season two, they did talk about something. I think they did the disease one, but it managed to reanimate the bodies, but I don't remember enough because I didn't watch that show because it got real boring real fast. Season two is when they lost me, when they decided, hey, let's take this show where we're going to go across the country and, you know, encounter zombies in different situations and just keep them in a house for a while. They went on for seasons after that where they tried to make up for it. They couldn't keep me, but I'm going to stick with the chart I've laid out here with the 80s and 90s, because this this is the ones where it gets very difficult to actually decide. Because if you use magic to reanimate your corpse, that magic could have a variety of impacts on the body. So zombie male and zombie female, it doesn't actually matter. We need a definition of how the magic recreates the body. So I think the main thing is because in the 80s, number two, hell is full, magic is reanimating corpses. It depends how decomposed the actual body is when it's reanimated. So you have a corpse who's just died like minutes ago and you reanimate that, everything might be still in place to be fully functional. But if you think about the movies from the 80s, it was usually like a skeleton hand comes up with half a chest and half their face ripped off, all that kind of stuff, because of decomposition. So that decomposition is going to affect all the organs within. And I would say in that case, you cannot produce a child, be it male or female, in any part of the matrix here. But if you get to the magic part, you might be getting to this whole Satan aspect where there's magic involved, where demons, Satan himself, decides to implant a baby within one of the corpses. The question is, if it's magic, then the magic could impact the body of the zombie so that it can produce a child. Because it's magic, the zombie male impregnating a healthy female would mean that you're getting genetic material impacted by magic. And so that would, the question then becomes, what kind of baby would you be producing? Would you be producing a half zombie baby? Would you be producing a super baby? Would you be producing a demon baby? Because the magic is the big question mark, because it's very difficult to decide what magic is until you have to sort of create a universe and a story where the magic has sort of its own set of rules. A demon maybe wants to create an heir, or it wants to be reborn, so it has a zombie impregnate a healthy female so that then it can be reborn itself. So you might actually be producing a demon. Same kind of goes for the healthy male to the zombie female. That happens, and then you end up with some kind of demon baby being incubated in the zombie female. Or maybe the magic in the zombie female that's reanimating it is what creates this strange offspring. But the offspring itself becomes a big question. So I think in this case, in the number two, you would be most likely to produce a baby between zombies and humans, or zombies and zombies. It would be a very interesting question. Does a zombie male producing offspring with a zombie female produce a super zombie, or produce some other kind of creature that has the attributes and the strengths of a zombie, but also the genetic material of healthy humans? That's a whole different question. The 90s chemical one leads us to the same problem, but I think it's less likely to produce offspring because the chemical is reanimating corpses. If it's reanimating corpses, then the damage has already been done and there's no magic element to like rebuild. Now, you could do the super soldier serum kind of story where the genetic material provided by the zombie male or the zombie female has attributes that increases the actual viability of the baby. But again, that doesn't seem to be that way. It seems like in the 90s, the chemical that was going into the ground was just detrimental. The only thing it seemed to do was create zombies that would come up and just desire to eat human brains. It's where in my head, the brains, give me brains, hunger brains, that kind of stuff. That's where that came from in my mind. It probably came a little early, like late 80s, but I'm trying to make this again, very clear transition. So it's just really easy to define. I'm going to cross that out because I think too much damage has been done to the zombie male and the zombie female to be able to viably produce offspring. But the question asker did not define enough elements of the question to actually come up with an answer. So I think if you wanted a zombie to produce an offspring of any sort, be it healthy male to zombie female, zombie male to healthy female, zombie male to zombie female, that kind of thing, I think the one you need to go to is sort of the 80s magic driven, hell is full, demonic possession style zombies that come up from the ground, because since they're imbued with magic, they have more opportunities to do more opportunities. There's more viability for them to be able to do something like produce offspring using the magic that's reanimating them in the first place. CMLB, yeah. I was throwing out some kids' books and I came across Star Wars Phonics, Friends to the End, and on the cover is Han Solo and Chewbacca. And I thought I would read this story and go through, once reading, reviewing this story is the kind of thing that happens when you have little kids and you're feeding them children-oriented content, in this case, supposed to appeal to the child and the parent, because I'm a Star Wars fan. I love the Star Wars. So this actually appeals to me as a Star Wars fan, but hopefully will also appeal to my child. But then as I read it, I started doing some, let's say, criticism. Let's say a little sort of analysis of what was actually going on in the book and things they were kind of by choice leaving out of the story when we're teaching our children from phonics about Han Solo and Chewbacca. So I'm going to read the story and then stop every now and then and give you a little bit of information that came to my mind when I was reading this story to my child. This is Chewie and Han. They do not look the same. They do not talk the same, but they are best friends. Good message. Happy with that. No notes. Han flies the ship. Chewie helps him. That bugged me a little bit because they're co-pilots. Chewie can fly the ship by himself. Han can fly the ship by himself. They fly it together. They're equals in this. In this book, they actually make Chewie take a secondary role. And that really sort of bothered me because to me, true friendship is about equality. They should be seen as equals. The next page says they jet right, they jet left. They're in space. They could jet up and down. They could jet sort of on angles. I think you'd be a little more creative with that. But I get what you're trying to do. Sometimes they need to get away fast, fast, fast. Now, here's an interesting question. Why do they have to get away fast, fast, fast? In the original story, Han Solo was running away from the Empire and the Hutts. The reason he was running away from the Hutts was because he had dumped in the Star Wars universe. There are things called Death Sticks. Now, we would know them as human beings on Earth as cigarettes. But in the Star Wars universe, they created Death Sticks as one of the more illegal drugs in the universe. Han Solo was transporting Death Sticks to another planet for the Hutts. So he was a smuggler. He was smuggling contraband, this contraband being a drug. So he is essentially a drug mule, a drug smuggler. And then he was caught by an Imperial ship and he had to dump his payload. Now, the thing is, when you dump your load, I keep wanting to make poopy jokes now. If you dump your load, the Hutts want to get paid back. That was the whole conflict between Han Solo and the Hutts. They just drift right past that one in a second. Now they're using a scene in the book where they're approaching the Cloud City. I can tell because in the background there are those two like pod ships that are stuck together that make zero sense to me. They weren't running away at that time until the end when they were trying to escape. But the next sentence is Chewie steps up to help. They jet away, zoom. Jet is now really bugging me because I don't think spaceships jet. I'm sure they have some other term for it. Sometimes the ship will not jet. Who can help Han fix it? Chewie can lend a hand. Now, here's the problem I have with this. This is when it actually really sort of stuck in my gourd and I felt I needed to do an analysis of this in front of other people. Sometimes the ship will not jet. Yes, it's a ship that breaks down a lot. That's true. No question there. Who can help Han fix it? Well, who can fix it should be the question, because Chewie is the primary mechanic. He's actually really good with machines. He's better at fixing the ship than Han Solo. Han Solo often gets in the way. So for me, this is, again, the inequality that they've built up here. It's like they truly don't understand the relationship or what these two characters bring to their relationship, because Chewie maintains and fixes the ship. Han Solo, he helps Chewie. So this sentence should be the opposite. Who can help Chewie fix it? Han can lend a hand, and then he probably will mess it up, so Chewie will kick him out of the ship and probably get an astromech to help him instead. Sometimes Chewie yells, Who can tell what Chewie says? Han can tell. I don't have any real problem with that. Han can tell the Wookiee language. He can, I guess he did Wookiee in high school or something. I'm not really sure how you would learn that. Sometimes Chewie gets stuck. He needs help to get out. He needs a friend. The picture they're showing is when he's in a cell, an Imperial cell, and he's just been tortured. This is actually Han Solo is thrown into the same cell and he's blind and he starts to regain his vision and Chewie hugs him. But it's not Chewie is stuck. They are both stuck and they need to help each other. He does need a friend. His friend comes back. They're very happy. I don't have a really problem with that. But again, they're showing sort of an imbalance in the ineptitude of both these characters, because Han Solo, if you really look at it, is the more inept yet charming character, whereas Chewie is the far more competent of the two when it comes to just doing regular stuff. Friends help each other in good times. Friends help each other in bad times. I'm okay with that. But you'll notice it's Chewie carrying C-3PO and Chewie helping R2-D2 after he's been blasted by the machine that he plugged into. It's Chewie helping out everybody. Whereas Han Solo, I think at this point, he's actually been frozen in carbonite. Chewie and Han are best friends to the end, and we know this is true because they're still friends when Han Solo dies in The Force Awakens.
Enter the mind of the Academy. Chop my big chest, where the best is a philosophy. Drinking at lunch brings verbal skills like a sucker punch. Welcome to CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah.